Good evening, everyone. This is Luke Cavalli, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Welcome to the program. Well, here we are. In the month of August, summer is passing us by. And I'm going to lead off the program tonight with a little article from Zero Hedge. ZeroHedge.com. Biden handlers ready to unleash trove of embarrassing Kamala stories in response to her book. This is by Tyler Durden, August 4th, 2025. And it's authored by Steve Watson via Modernity.news. Joe Biden's inner circle are reportedly preparing to spill all the beans on just how awful Kamala Harris was as vice president, sure her upcoming book put him in a bad light. That's according to journalist Mark Halperin, who claims Biden loyalists have a store of embarrassing stories they're holding back, but will make public should Harris negatively reference Biden's cognitive decline. It's now common knowledge that Biden's camp, especially his wife, despise Harris for going along with a Democratic Party coup against Joe. In an appearance on the Morning Meeting show, Halperin stated, quote, "I will tell you, and this has never been reported, barely at all. If the Biden people decide that Kamala Harris is coming after Joe Biden, wait till you hear the Palin-esque stories about how much they tried to help her be prepared to be vice president and be in a position to run," unquote. Halperin further claimed that the details will expose, quote, "how much they decided, not happening, she's not up to this." And Halperin urged, "if the Biden people feel threatened, you will hear stories about Kamala Harris as vice president that will not make her look good." He added, "it's not like they're at war currently, but I'm telling you, if Joe Biden feels threatened, if his people feel threatened by her, this is going to escalate in a big way," unquote. Halperin further asserted that the Biden inner circle pulled out all the stops, quote, "in trying to help her do the job of vice president," unquote. And Halperin emphasized, quote, "they gave her every opportunity." And they did. They found in some instances that she had some issues, unquote. Yeah, we noticed. Harris announced the upcoming memoir this week with several bizarre, cackling social media posts and appearances reminding the entire world just how much of a bullet we all dodged. Meanwhile, one of Biden's top aides, Mike Donilon, has revealed that he made a whopping $4 million working for him, that means Biden, in 2024 alone. According to Axios, Donilon was also slated to receive another $4 million if Biden was somehow able to get reelected. The details came out in closed-door testimony to the House Oversight Committee, which is investigating the cover-up of Biden's cognitive decline. Is it any wonder that they were so keen on hiding him from the media? And again, that was from Zero Hedge by Tyler Durden, August 4th. And here we have something, August 3rd, from the Washington Times. Golden Dome Missile Shield and Spotlight at this week's Space and Missile Defense Symposium. This one, as I said, is from the Washington Times by Ben Wolfgang. President Trump's ambitious push for a Golden Dome Missile Shield will be a key theme this week at the Space and Missile Defense Symposium, where some of the world's most futuristic military technology will be on display, and key Pentagon officials will address 21st century missile and space-based threats facing the American homeland. The three-day event in Huntsville, Alabama, which begins Tuesday, and that would be Tuesday, August 5th, is expected to draw well over 7,000 people and a host of leading defense companies from around the world. General Stephen Whiting, commander of U.S. Space Command, and Lieutenant General Sean Gainey, commander of the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command and Joint Functional Component Command for Integrated Missile Defense, are among the top Pentagon figures slated to speak. Army officials said General Gainey's remarks at a pivotal moment in the evolution of U.S. space and missile defense will focus on the outsized, this is in quotes, outsized value that SMDC, and that again was U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command, what that brings to warfare and the criticality of space and missile defense for national security, unquote. General Gainey said in a statement, the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command is the Army's space and missile defense warfighting headquarters. At SMDC, we're adding operational value wherever we can, unquote. Other Pentagon officials will speak at the symposium and participate in high-level panel discussions on using artificial intelligence to improve missile defense and other issues. The symposium is sponsored by the Air, Space, and Missile Defense Association, the Tennessee Valley Chapter of the National Defense Industrial Association, and the Huntsville Air Defense Artillery Association. The conference's location is key. Huntsville is one of the nation's epicenters for cutting-edge research, development, and fielding capabilities in the space, military, and other domains critical to U.S. national security. It's also home to Redstone Arsenal, a sprawling 38,000-acre federal complex hosting more than 70 organizations that include NASA, Army Materiel Command, make that Army Materiel Command, the Missile Defense Agency, and other crucial arms of the government. Army Materiel Command, again, Army Materiel Command, the unit responsible for much of the service's manufacturing production, is at the cutting edge of technological progress inside the military. Lieutenant General Chris Mohan, the Deputy Commanding General and Acting Commander of the unit, joined the Threat Status weekly podcast earlier this year and explained how 3D printing will enable the military to build drone bodies and their flight components in microelectronics at sites in the U.S. and potentially halfway around the world if necessary. General Mohan stated, very soon we will have the capability to manufacture the vast majority of the system in-house with government-owned tech data, if you will. And he said that detailing one of the capabilities designed to keep the U.S. military a step ahead of its adversaries. Golden Dome in focus. The proposed Golden Dome missile shield, the Trump administration's signature defense and technology initiative, is critical in protecting the homeland from adversaries, particularly Russia and China. Both nations have highly advanced missile programs. China is expected to expand its arsenal to presently 600 hypersonic missiles to as many as 4,000 by 2035, according to U.S. government estimates. Russia is expected to have 1,000 hypersonic weapons within a decade. To guard against missile attacks, including potential assaults from space, Mr. Trump has ordered the Pentagon to complete the Golden Dome before he leaves office. The project is expected to integrate advanced space-based interceptors with existing missile defense capabilities, likely including terminal high-altitude air defense, or THAAD, anti-ballistic missile defense batteries. And it goes on just a bit more. The rest is a little technical, so I won't read that right now. Again, if you'd like to see all the details, this came from the Washington Times, Sunday, August 3rd, 2025. Now, from Fox News. Fighter jet scrambled after civilian aircraft violates Trump airspace at New Jersey Bedminster. NORAD used flares to escort civilian plane from restricted zone over Bedminster. This was by Greg Werner, Fox News, August 3rd, 2025. Fighter jet scrambled to intercept a civilian aircraft on Sunday after it entered restricted airspace over Trump's Bedminster retreat. The pilot flew into a temporary flight restriction, or TFR zone, at about 12:50 p.m. Eastern Time, according to a statement from the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD. The civilian aircraft was escorted out of the area by NORAD aircraft after using flares to draw the pilot's attention. NORAD said the intercept was the second of the day, noting that another aircraft had entered the TFR zone. In total, there were 5 unauthorized incursions over the weekend. The second instance, NORAD said, involved flares, which may have been visible to the public. NORAD added that flares, quote, are employed with the highest regard for the safety of the intercepted aircraft and people on the ground, unquote. The flares also burn out quickly and completely, NORAD said, so there is no danger to those on the ground when dispersed. Officials are warning private pilots to do their homework before takeoff. NORAD stated, quote, general aviation pilots are reminded to verify all Federal Aviation Agency, FAA, notice to airmen, and fly informed before every flight. In the instance of the Bedminster, New Jersey region, specifically FAA, notice to airmen, and it gives the numbers. I won't bother with those right now. Well, to me, that's a little sobering that they can get right close to the president that way with civilian aircraft. Of course, the great majority would be innocent, probably just blundered into the airspace over Bedminster. But you do wonder what happens if one of these has some violent intent. How much time is there to find out and protect the president before something terrible happens? I don't know the answer to that question. But it certainly is a sobering thought. It closes by saying, according to the president's schedule, Trump was out of town at the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster on Sunday and is expected to return to the White House on Sunday evening. All right, that was from Fox News, August 3rd, about fighter jet scrambled. All right. Those of you listening probably know this, but I'll say it in case we've got some newcomers, which would be wonderful. If you want to visit our website, you can see all the different venues at which you can hear the program. I know that in my own case, some weeks lately, the reception has been very poor on shortwave, which is somewhat typical for the summer with longer daylight hours. You can hear us on a frequency of 4.840 megacycles, 4.840, Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. And if you have access to the Internet, you can hear us directly from WWRC's own website, which is simply WWRC.com, worldwide. Make that WWCR.com, Worldwide Christian Radio. I always have to say that in my head, those words for the title, to make sure I get the letters right. Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com. That's Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, 4.840 is the frequency, or if you're listening directly on the Internet, WWCR.com. You can also hear us Saturday mornings, a repeat of the Thursday evening program, and sometimes the frequency is much better Saturday morning because it's a different frequency, 9.740, I believe. Again, you can check our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com. It has all the different venues, K-Star Talk Radio, KingdomStarRadio.com, Global Star Satellite Network. So you can hear us in various ways. You can also, if all else fails, go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and go to the archives. And I think they're up to date now and working properly. We had some problems with the archives for a few weeks, and I wasn't even aware of it. It goes to show I need to check that more frequently. But I think they're up and running just fine right now. So if you haven't Let me say that again. If you have to miss a program, you can always go to that means of hearing it anytime, day or night. Just go to DivideKingdomRadio.com, click in the archives, and select the day program you'd like to hear. Now, getting back to some articles. We've covered this topic a number of times in the last 3 or 4 months. From Lakeside News, males have stolen almost 2,000 gold medals in women's sports since the 1980s. This is by Kelvin Freeberger, Friday, August 1st, 2025. Again, from Lakeside News. Biological males have taken almost 2,000 medals from actual female Americans in female athletic programs since the 1980s, according to a report from Concerned Women for America, CWA for short. The fact sheet is based on a review of data compiled by He Cheated, a website dedicated to compiling examples of, quote, male athletes who are dominating female sports, setting records, stealing podium spots, medals, award money, positions on national teams, and causing women and girls to be excluded from our own sporting category, unquote. Again, the name of that website is HeCheated.com. It finds that more than 1,941 gold medals in female events that would have gone to female athletes have instead been claimed by men identifying as trans women. And along with them, more than $493,173 in prize money across more than 10,067 amateur and professional events. The states in which the problem is most prevalent are California, and I'll just interject, we might have known that, a far lefty state. Also Washington, I assume that means Washington State, Oregon, Arizona, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut. And remember, CWA stands for Concerned Women for America. And here's a quote from CWA President Penny Nance. She told the Christian Post, quote, "For too long, trans-identifying males have displaced, disrupted, and injured women and girls in female sports categories." She told the Christian Post, "Our research reveals the shocking truth of the matter. Over 1,900 women have come in second place to men who claim to be women. This is outrageous. Outrageously unjust. Women and girls must have sex-protected athletics under Title IX. Unquote. While Nance celebrated the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee's recent decision to exclude men from female events, she said other national athletic governing bodies still need to follow suit and urged Congress to pass a federal law, the Protection of Women in Olympic and Amateur Sports Act, forcing them to do so if they want to keep receiving federal Title IX funds. Mandatory inclusion of gender-confused individuals in opposite-sex sports is promoted as a matter of inclusivity, but critics note that indulging transgender athletes undermines the original national basis for having sex-specific athletics in the first place, thereby depriving female athletes of recognition and professional or academic opportunities. There have been numerous high-profile examples in recent years of men winning women's competitions, and research affirms that physiology gives males distinct athletic advantages that cannot be fully negated by hormone suppression. In a 2019 paper published by the Journal of Medical Ethics, New Zealand, researchers found that, quote, "healthy young men do not lose significant muscle mass or power when their circulating testosterone levels were reduced to below International Olympic Committee guidelines for 20 weeks. Also, indirect effects of testosterone on factors such as bone structure, lung volume, and heart size will not be altered by hormone therapy. Therefore, the advantage to trans women, that is, biological men, are afforded by the International Olympic Committee guidelines is an intolerable unfairness, unquote. And I think that just goes with what I said a few weeks back. Common sense tells you that taking hormones doesn't change a man's reach, doesn't change his height, it doesn't substantially change his weight, it doesn't change his muscular structure. So just a man claiming that he's a woman is grossly unfair to allow such a person to compete with women. Common sense just tells us that. I can't say over and over enough. This is one of the stupidest things in my long lifetime that I've ever heard. The idea that you just let men pretend they're women and thereby compete against them. We know there was a boxer in some competition some months ago where the man completely beat up on the woman. And why not? Because he was bigger, stronger, had a longer reach. Totally unfair. And the idea that some of these left-wing woke ideologues have promoted this is just, I don't know, just the stupidest thing I can think of in all my lifetime. Can I put it any stronger? If I could, I would. But I probably can't do that on the air. Anyway, getting back to this article, again, this appeared in LifeSite News, and I'll give you the source completely in a minute. Critics also argue that forcing girls to share intimate facilities, such as bathrooms, showers, or changing areas, with members of the opposite sex violates their privacy rights, subjects them to needless emotional stress, and gives potential male predators a viable pretext to enter female bathrooms or lockers by simply claiming transgender status. Even the left-wing United Nations has acknowledged as much via an October 2024 report by Special Rapporteur Reen Al-Salem, which found that more than 600 female athletes around the world have lost more than 890 medals to men in 29 sports as of March 2024. To avoid the loss of a fair opportunity, males must not compete in the female categories of sport, the report concluded. And you wonder, again, that came from LifeSite News, and the date was August 1st, just a few days back. You wonder how anybody could defend such an outlandish, stupid, idiotic idea. And yet you have some of these extreme leftists who will say, oh, you better let anybody compete that wants to. They say they're women. Well, that doesn't make them a woman. All right, enough of that. Well, here's something else from LifeSite News. Very interesting thing. Young men have overwhelmingly shifted Republican since 2023, according to Pew Research. And here we have a little quote that they use as a subtitle. The left has no idea the monster they've created with Gen Z men. Absolutely no idea, one commentator said. This was by Doug Mainwaring, Friday, August 1st, 2025. And I'll just insert here, Generation Z, or Gen Z, is a generation born between the late 1990s and the early 2010s. So now they're roughly people ages 13 through 29 in that age group. And the article says, apparently the woke left has awakened a sleeping giant. Research Center's annual National Public Opinion Reference Survey, NPRS for short, reveals a dramatic shift in partisan identification among young U.S. adults in recent years. Pew's annual report shows a whopping 44-point move from Democrat to Republican among men ages 18 to 29 over the last 2 years. Women in that age cohort have also swung red by 14 points. Quote, Pew Research is showing some incredible partisan swings from 2023 to 2025, noted political analyst Christian Hines, H-E-I-E-N-S, in a post on X that has drawn a lot of attention. And commentator Robert Sterling, interpreting the Pew data displayed in graphs, said, "The left has no idea the monster they've created with Gen Z men. Absolutely no idea. These guys spent their formative years navigating an unprecedented social experiment. COVID lockdowns, DEI struggle sessions, pronouns, microaggressions, land acknowledgments, intersectional justice. And as a demographic, they simply snapped," explained Sterling. He went on to say they stopped fearing cancellation. They realized black marks and social credit scores don't leave permanent stains, and they started owning, rather than futilely trying to defend against, the accusations of villainy they have suffered since a young age," unquote. Then he continued, "It's a wholesale reactionary movement against a political system, more than that, a culture at large, which, rightly or wrongly, they see as dedicated to their emasculation, a system that, in their view, creates little of value, affords them scant opportunity, celebrates that which is ugly and mediocre, and profanes that which is sacred." And said Sterling, "From the fires of this crucible is emerging the most right-wing generation I've ever seen." And those are the words, again, of Robert Sterling. Let me check that. Yes, Robert Sterling. And he predicted that these young men will be tomorrow's legislators and congressmen. The father of a 19-year-old, Andrew A. Abbott, suggested that after observing his son and his friends, Sterling was, quote, understating it, unquote. Said Abbott, "Zero tolerance for the abstraction and fruity nonsense that defines the modern left. I've often said that the internet destroyed the Democrats' capacity to enforce a narrative, so they drift," unquote. And said ex-user Aiden, a young business consultant, "They told me I was evil because I was a white male all my life, guilty for everything beautiful about my heritage. Democrats had everything." Now, this is a different ex-user saying this. "Democrats had everything on their side. Mainstream media, Hollywood, music industry, all of social media, Silicon Valley, most celebrities, and still they messed up with a new generation of voters." And those were the words of another ex-user summing up the Democrats' demographic woes. Earlier this year, Reuters reported that a large global survey showed a, quote, surge in despair and disillusionment with established politics, especially among young American men, the only U.S. population group to turn more conservative over the past decade, unquote. Not only are they becoming political conservatives, but young men in the U.S. are also leading a religious resurgence, halting a decades-long decline in church participation. And this is a quote, "Gen Zers, especially Gen Z men, are actually more likely to attend weekly religious services than millennials and even some younger Gen Xers, according to an Axios report in May. Noted Axios, within older generations is a consistent gender gap among Christians, with women more likely to be religious than men. But with Gen Z, the gap is closed as young men join the church and young women leave it." Interesting. So that report comes from LifeSite News, Friday, August 1st. The title, "Young Men Have Overwhelmingly Shifted Republican Since 2023, According to Pew Research." All right, again, if you'd like to write to me with comments, we can always use a little donation here and there. Donations tend to fall off in the summer. People are busy. We know that. But we do need your help to stay on the air. So if you can give us a little donation or simply write to us some encouraging words or some criticism, we take criticism know that. CAVERLY. And the post office box is 28, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. So again, that's Lou Caroli, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. You didn't have a pen or pencil? I'll get that address later in the program. We love to get letters. And I know my late wife, Elizabeth, would be very cheered up if she could see some of the letters we got lately. Some very kind and encouraging letters. Don't forget to pray for our listeners. Pray for that doctor. Haven't heard from him for a couple weeks. Our doctor up in Philadelphia area, who's been very kind. He's anonymous. Don't know his name, but he's been very good to us for the past several years. And many, many other good people. It's just too numerous to mention. And some of them might prefer not to have their names mentioned. But I thank them all for their kindness and their support. And now back to LifeSite news. 16 Republican attorneys general asked Congress to crack down on SHIELD laws protecting abortionists. And the summary at the beginning says pro-abortion SHIELD laws violate the Constitution and are blatant attempts to interfere with states' ability to enforce criminal laws within their borders, the attorneys general wrote in a letter to congressional leaders. This is by Calvin Freeberger, Friday, August 1st, 2025. 16 Republican state attorneys general have signed a letter to the leaders of Congress demanding federal action to stop state so-called SHIELD laws that help abortionists facilitate illegal abortions across state lines. 12 states currently ban all or most abortions, but the abortion lobby continues to work feverishly to preserve quote-unquote access through a variety of means, most permanently deregulated interstate distribution of abortion pills, enabling the abortion industry to shift much of its business focus from surgical abortions to mailing abortion pills into states where abortion is illegal, to be taken in the privacy of one's home with no medical oversight. Such abortions are effectively impossible to prevent without preventing the pills from being mailed in the first place. Yet several pro-abortion states have enacted SHIELD laws forbidding cooperation with out-of-state law enforcement, attempting to enforce pro-life laws. According to the pro-abortion Guttmacher Institute, quote, 22 states in the District of Columbia have some level of SHIELD law protection related to reproductive health or gender-affirming care, 8 of which extend protections to telehealth provisions. In response to the problem, Arkansas Attorney General Tim Griffin led 15 of his counterparts in a July 29th letter to the leaders of both parties in the U.S. Senate and House, saying that, quote, these laws are blatant attempts to interfere with states' ability to enforce criminal laws within their borders and disrupt their constitutional structure. Therefore, we are asking Congress to assess the constitutional authority it may have to preempt SHIELD laws. By encouraging medical professionals in pro-abortion states to violate pro-life state abortion laws, SHIELD laws are antithetical to the spirit of federalism and the Dobbs decision by not allowing each state to regulate abortion as it sees fit, the letter states. And it goes on, SHIELD laws also raise serious constitutional concerns. For example, they violate the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution because they do not give full faith and credit to the judicial proceedings occurring in other states. U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Section 1, it continues, says, that's the reference they're referring to. U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Section 1. And it goes on, when New York and California refuses to respect a criminal prosecution or a civil judgment against an individual who is accused of violating the abortion laws of another state, they are refusing to give full faith and credit to that state's judicial proceedings. and so on. I think I'll stop there on this one. If you would like to read the entire article, it goes to about 2.5 pages. It's from LifeSite News, Friday, August 1st. The title, 16 Republican Attorneys General, or AGs, ask Congress to crack down on shield laws, etc. All right, here's a little stunning thing. It could be stunning. We don't really know. From the New York Post, radioactive wasp nest found at American Cold War era nuclear bomb site. This is by the Associated Press, July 30th, 2025. Workers at a site in South Carolina that once made key parts of nuclear bombs in the U.S. have found a radioactive wasp nest. But officials said there is no danger to anyone. This is Lou speaking now. Don't you just love it? They haven't done very much research, at least I don't think so. And yet they say, oh, don't worry, it's okay. Don't worry, there's no danger to anyone. I wonder how they know that. Well, going back to the article, employees who routinely check radiation levels at the Savannah River site near Aiken, that would be Aiken, Georgia, no, I'm sorry, Aiken, South Carolina, found a wasp nest on July 3rd. The nest had a radiation level 10 times what is allowed by federal regulations, officials said. The workers sprayed the nest with insect killer, removed it, and disposed of it as radioactive waste. No wasps were found, officials said. The report said there is no leak from the waste tanks, and the nest was likely radioactive, though it called, quote, on-site legacy radioactive contamination from the residual radioactivity left from the site, or left when the site was fully operational. You people out there listening understand that? On-site legacy radioactive contamination. Well, how did that occur if there was no leak? Well, it boggles my mind. Maybe it boggles yours, too. Back to the article. The watchdog group, Savannah River Site Watch, said the report was at best incomplete since it doesn't detail where the contamination came from, how the wasps might have encountered it, and the possibility there could be another radioactive nest if there is a leak somewhere. Knowing the type of wasp nest could be critical. Some wasps make nests out of dirt. Others use different material, which could pinpoint where the contamination came from. Tom Clements, executive director of the group, wrote in a text message. Clements said, quote, I'm as mad as a hornet. That SRS, now what is SRS? Savannah River Site. Didn't explain where the radioactive waste came from, or if there was some kind of leak from the waste tanks that the public should be aware of. The tank farm is well inside the boundaries of the site, and the wasps generally fly just a few hundred yards from their nests. So there is no danger they are outside the facility, according to a statement from Savannah River Mission Completion, which now oversees the site. If there had been wasps found, they would have significantly lower levels of radiation. Let me start that one again. If there had been wasps found, they would have significantly lower levels of radiation than their nests, according to the statement which was given to the Aiken Standard. The site was opened in the early 1950s to manufacture the plutonium pits needed to make the core of nuclear bombs during the start of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. Now the site has shifted toward making fuel for nuclear plants and cleanup. The site generated more than 165 million gallons of liquid nuclear waste, which has, through evaporation, been reduced to about 34 million gallons, according to Savannah River Mission Completion. There are still 43 of the underground tanks in use, while 8 have been closed. Well, that's that. Does that mean it's safe? I don't know. I'm not sure they know. The big question is something leaking? And I don't think we have an answer to that. Well, again, this is July 30th. The New York Post: radioactive washness found at American Cold War era nuclear bomb site. Now, switch over to the Gateway Pundit by Antonio Greseppo, August 4th, 2025. The title, "You're Fired. Trump Was Right. ELS Commissioner Inflated Job Numbers to Benefit Biden and Harris." President Trump dismissed Erica Bickentarfer, the now former commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's what BLS is, after rightfully accusing her of deliberately inflating employment numbers ahead of the election to boost Kamala Harris's campaign. He pointed to a false report, a falsely reported all-time high. So that's what the original report claimed. And job figures that was later revised down by nearly a million jobs. And Harry, he described, that is President Trump described, as the most severe in over 50 years. Supporting Bickentarfer's firing, National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett cited a, quote, partisan pattern, unquote, in the Bureau of Labor Statistics reporting. And he emphasized the need for a fresh set of eyes at the agency. Apart from lying about the total number of jobs created, roughly a quarter of Biden's job growth in some periods was government jobs funded by taxpayers. Most job growth was part-time employment, while full-time jobs remained flat. Workforce participation declined, which artificially improved the unemployment rate. And because of Biden's catastrophic inflation, real wage growth was negative throughout his presidency. When Biden handed off the economy to Trump, employment levels were still inferior to what Trump had built by 2019. In 2020 and 2021, unemployment reached Depression-era levels because of the destructive COVID lockdowns, with the official rate hitting 14.7% in April of 2020, the highest since the Great Depression, though the actual rate may have exceeded 19% when accounting for measurement issues. After June 2022, when employment finally returned to its pre-pandemic levels, 22% of the 6.6 million jobs created through the end of Biden's term were government jobs. Physical State of the Union, that's the source, is Physical State of the Union, Biden's real wage decline, House Budget Committee. In 2023, government positions accounted for nearly 25% of all job gains, with some months seeing the public sector responsible for about one quarter of total job growth. Government employment had the second fastest growth of any sector, trailing only healthcare. Over the final 12 months of Biden's term, the number of full-time jobs remained essentially flat, meaning nearly all job growth came from the part-time employment. In fact, December 2024 and January 2025 saw the steepest two-month decline in full-time jobs since the COVID lockdowns of March and April 2020. By July 2025, 4.7 million Americans were working part-time for economic reasons. People who wanted full-time work but were either unable to find it or had their hours cut. And it goes on with some other statistics. I won't bore you with all the details. They talk about inflation. At one point, inflation under Biden reached a 40-year high, severely impacting real wage growth. Although nominal wages rose, they failed to keep pace with price increases. Biden touted rising earnings as a success, but in reality, wages lost purchasing power. And it goes on in the article, giving some statistics to back that up. And I'm going to skip down now. While total employment eventually surpassed pre-pandemic levels, native-born employment remained well below trend. In fact, native-born workers held 121,000 fewer jobs than before the pandemic, and 5.5 million fewer than the pre-pandemic trajectory. All net job gains since the start of 2020 went to foreign-born workers, while native-born Americans experienced a net job loss. When comparing total employment to pre-pandemic levels, the increase was just 3.7 million jobs, still short of the 6.7 million jobs created under President Trump before the pandemic, meaning Biden fell about 3 million jobs behind that benchmark. Okay, going to take a little break from those and get my little phone out and look up something about New Hampshire. One of our intrepid researchers up in the great Commonwealth of Massachusetts, my old home state, tipped me off that something is happening with the automobile situation in the state of New Hampshire. I've always loved New Hampshire. It's a beautiful state. My dad lived there as a young man, actually as a young boy, and loved it up there. So we would often go up there summertimes for a little quick vacation from where we lived in northeastern Massachusetts. I can remember that very often we would, at home, listen on the old black and white TV to professional wrestling in the days of Bruno Sammartino. Some of you may be old enough to remember him, Killer Kowalski, and a number of others, Buddy Rogers, and some of the other names of the, I suppose, the 1950s that we'd go back to. Well, let's see now. We have a little article here. I wanted to check this out. So I went to the internet and checked out New Hampshire's automobile inspections. Now, in Massachusetts, when I was a boy, my dad would have to get his vehicles inspected twice a year. It wasn't a comprehensive inspection, but it would check out the most essential things, the headlights, taillights, brake lights, brakes themselves, things of that nature that could cause an accident or lead to disaster if they weren't functioning correctly. Well, here's the article. The reason I brought up the wrestling is it's from the very same TV station's website that we used to watch the wrestling on, WMUR, which in those days was Channel 9, and I think it probably still is, in Manchester, New Hampshire. Well, the article is entitled, I'm waiting for it to come up here. Yeah, it's WMUR, Channel 9, ABC. New Hampshire vehicle inspections will no longer be required beginning next year. This is from June 28, 2025, so it's about a month old. Manchester. New Hampshire drivers will no longer need to get their vehicles inspected starting next year after Governor Kelly Ayotte signed the new state budget into law Friday afternoon. A provision of the budget that was tacked on will do away with vehicle inspections as of January 31st, 2026. Sources tell News 9 the repeal was a, quote, absolute condition, unquote, for House Republicans to pass the budget during the negotiation process. Emissions testing will also be repealed by the end of next September, although the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services is allowed to get a waiver from the Environmental Protection Agency that can remove the emissions testing even sooner. Sources tell News 9 the process to get that waiver approved is happening quickly. As of now, all New Hampshire vehicles need a safety inspection. A new one is needed every year, costing up to $50 for each vehicle, and the required sticker is commonly seen on windshields. All right, that gives you an idea. And as I say, in Massachusetts, when I was a boy, the inspections were twice a year. I remember one time my dad started off to visit his sister-in-law, my mother's sister, who lived only about 10 miles away. He got halfway there, and he thought, oh, my gosh, I don't have my new sticker on. He had the car inspected, but he didn't put the sticker on the windshield. So we had to drive back and get that put on. Now, here in Maryland, you had the car inspected just once when the car is sold. So a new car has to be inspected. If I sell my car by a private sale to somebody else, they have to get it inspected before they can get it registered. And that's a much more comprehensive inspection with all kinds of details inspected. But it's a one-time inspection. If I buy an automobile, for example, I bought one in 2011 from a dealership, so they inspected it through their garage. And I kept that car until just a few months ago. And all that time, that Chevy Impala never had to be inspected. I don't think that's such a good thing myself, because there were numerous things that went wrong. I got them all fixed. But taillights could go bad, brake lights could go bad, headlights could go bad, for that matter. All kinds of things could go bad. Brakes could go bad. And unless I got in an accident, unless one of the police pulled me over for having no taillights or something along those lines, nothing would happen. So cars could be on the road that are in bad shape, potential accident causing automobiles. Well, I think the same thing could happen in New Hampshire. I guess we'll find out. Oh, they'll find out anyway. Now, it seems to me there might have been one other thing I was going to mention in the, among the headlines. Let me check that out again. See if there's something worth noting. Let's see now. Well, I don't see it, so I think I'll go on to my printed articles again. Let's see what else we have here. Here's one from Fox News, dated July 31st, just a few days ago. Migrant sex crimes surge in major U.S. city tied to Biden's open border. Is that any surprise? And Mexico's safe haven, according to a former judge. And the subheadline, six-month Houston operation surpasses entire 2024 fiscal year total for such arrests. This is by Sarah Rump with R-U-M-P-H. No, I'm sorry, R-U-M-P-F. W-H-I-T-T-E-N, that's the author, on Fox News. And the subheadline, numbers don't lie, former judge says Houston migrant sex crime wave tied to border failures. Former Arizona Supreme Court Judge Andrew Gould tells Fox News Digital that Houston's wave of migrant sex crime arrests stems from failed border enforcement and a renewed Trump-era crackdown targeting the, quote, worst of the worst, unquote. In a sweeping 6 months effort, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, arrested 214 illegal immigrants in the Houston area for offenses involving the sexual exploitation of minors, successfully surpassing the total number for the entire 2024 fiscal year, when only 211 such arrests were made. According to a release from ICE, each of those arrests was either charged with or convicted of a child sex offense. The agency attributes this spike to a whole-of-government strategy enacted under the Trump administration. Former Arizona Supreme Court Judge Andrew Gould, who previously served in the border city of Yuma, told Fox News Digital that Houston's proximity to the southern border plays a significant role in the surge of arrests. And these are his words, Judge Gould. In Yuma, sex trafficking and sexual offenses were common because offenders could commit a crime and then flee to an enclave in Mexico, Gould explained. He went on, for a border state like Texas and a city like Houston that isn't too far from the border, it doesn't surprise me at all to see these kinds of arrests. Gould emphasized that the surge in arrests reflects more than Houston's proximity to the southern border. It's also the result of renewed political will. This is a renewed commitment, Gould said. They put together a multi-agency task force involving the FBI, DEA, Customs, and state law enforcement. The numbers don't lie. What we're seeing in these arrests reflects a policy shift, unquote. He contrasted the Trump administration's posture on immigration enforcement with the Biden's administration, arguing that the current administration has prioritized the removal of individuals charged with felonies, especially those involving children. Judge Gould said, quote, Trump has done an excellent job shutting down the border. But now the administration is focusing on what to do internally, and that's targeting the worst of the worst. That's what we're seeing, unquote. Gould noted that the success of these operations hinges on the close cooperation between local and federal law enforcement. He said, federal reach only goes so far. Local law enforcement knows that these offenders are, knows who these offenders are and where they are. They have the most at stake because it's their communities. And I'll just interject that day by day we hear on the radio or TV, especially on Fox News, that these sanctuary cities and states have released convicted criminals into the community. A mother and daughter was just killed, just heard in the news today, and I think it might have been in New Jersey, by a hit and a, I don't know if it was a hit and run driver, but a driver driving, I think intoxicated, and he was a convicted illegal immigrant. He should not have been in the country. He certainly should not have been behind the wheel of an automobile. But there you have it. All these Biden-era policies are still haunting us here in the United States. The damage done by Biden is just incalculable. And I really think it will go down in history as one of the worst, if not the worst, U.S. presidents. Well, sounds like our music is coming on. Thank you for listening. Again, if you want to write to us, you can make a donation, but you don't have to. We still like to get your letters. Write to me, Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Great to be with you. Tune in again next week for the Divided Kingdom. And thank you all for listening. Good night.